T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yeah, the problem is that some guys matter more than others. You can't just say, well, everything's better in the second half. Yeah, but the guys that mattered were bad. And generally, and you'll learn this as the Bears season goes on, one thing that I've learned about working with Hub Arkush for a long time and listening to Hub Arkush ever since I was a little kid. I was very, very young. One of the first sounds that ever came out of my radio, I think, is that usually when I'm really down on the Bears, it makes me feel a little bit better. Sometimes when I'm really excited, he always pulls me back in. So maybe he'll help us out today. Hub Arkush of Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly and the 670 The Score senior Bears expert on Twitter at Hub_Arkush joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. Was it as bad as I thought, Hub?
Well, no, I don't think it was awful. I mean, it wasn't good. It was certainly a wake-up call. The Bengals are not a very good football team. The Bengals also have a new offensive coordinator and a new offense, so there was a lot of apples to apples out there. And obviously they were a better football team when their first and second strings were on the field. Now, that doesn't mean they're more talented. I think you can find a few things in there with the Bears that you can feel okay about. But I thought it was kind of a wake-up call, almost a shot across the bow. Okay, there's a bunch of stuff you guys got to focus on the next 3 weeks. And the timing's good, meaningless exhibition game. But last night was disappointing.
Blocking and tackling is something that these guys are always going to work on, whether it's good or bad. Coaches are going to find coaching points. I'm more concerned, or I guess interested, in where the X's and O's. Like, what do we learn? What do we see about this offense, if anything? I thought I saw a couple of things that Matt Nagy's offense is going to try and do. Trey Burton was in motion a bunch. I wonder what you saw, and whether or not when Chase Daniel was out there, we saw a little bit more of how this offense may want to function.
Well, yes and no, Connor. I mean, the bottom line is that there's no game planning going on. They don't scheme to accomplish anything in particular. Matt Nagy at this point is talking about concepts where he might string a few plays together to see how they work and how the defense reacts to them. But I wouldn't try and read too much into what the Bears offense is going to look like really until week two, week three of the regular season. But minimally, at least till you get to, normally it's the third exhibition game. It's going to be the fourth this year for the Bears. Although, who knows, maybe they'll show a little bit more than others might next week in Denver. I think the best you're going to get out of these games is seeing how individual players, to Dan's point, at the top half of your roster are reacting to what it is they're being asked to do. And that wasn't so good last night. I think on the opening play, it's really excited to see Kevin White beat his guy like a drum, because he did. He had a step and a half on him, and Trubisky didn't get close to him. Now, the quarterbacks are going to miss throws once in a while. It's just that would have been a big deal if he could have hit White on that play. And then they come back three plays later, and he throws a really nice 11-yard curl, and White just flat out drops it. Horrible combination there. Some of the interior line blocking I thought was really disappointing, and that's a big concern as to what's going to happen at that left guard position. You look around on defense, and to me, it's not so much the missed tackles as who was missing them. Again, I don't know that you're set at safety. I think one thing that was really obvious out there, and I'm stuck on this one because I tap danced around it for 3 weeks and I can't tap dance around it any longer. The holdout is Roquan Smith's agent's fault, and therefore it's his fault. I mean, once you put all the evidence that we have together that we think we know, that's the bottom line. And now it's time for this kid to get in there. And I don't fault the Bears, and I don't think the Bears should cave. That said, John Timo can't be on the field when the other team's first and second string is. So that's a problem, okay? And obviously you got to get Dan Trevathan out there too. So, it's just a bunch of, kind of one-off observations that popped out of that exhibition game.
Why shouldn't the Bears cave on this if four other teams already have? It's not really a precedent at this point.
Well, because 27 other teams haven't, and there's a reason. And it's anecdotal that four teams have. I don't think anybody has actually seen the alleged four contracts that we're talking about. That's the perception we all have. It's an unreasonable ask, Dan. And at the end of the day, if the Bears cave on it, is it going to ruin the organization? No, probably not. But it does send a message that the Bears will cave. And that's why they shouldn't do it, because it's not a reasonable request. And, you know, I it's very frustrating to me, because it's not being done in the best interest of either the player or the team. It's being done in the best interest of the agents, and they're not supposed to be part of this story. They're supposed to be, you know, guiding the player. So I feel bad for both sides, but Smith, to me, is the one with the power to do something about it.
If that's the case, then is it a relationship that he's got to have with coaches, with advisors, not CAA, that he just decides, let's go play football?
No, kind of. I mean, CAA isn't going anywhere. They had 7 of the top 10 picks. They're going to be around. Everybody's got to deal with everybody. But I think, unfortunately, the Bears have been chosen as a team with a chance to teach them a message, and you're not writing the rules here. From Roquan Smith's perspective, it's always been simple. I mean, this is what they're telling him. He says, I'm paying him a lot, and he is paying him a lot of money. You know, they're probably getting, I don't know what their fee is, but it's probably minimally it's in the 3 to 5% range of a $20 million deal. And for that money, you know, it's usually wise to listen to your advisors, but in this case, they're steering him wrong, you know, and I don't know. I don't know a lot about his family background. I think it's a pretty solid family background. He seems like a really bright kid. And so I just think it's time to be a man and say, hey, what's in my best interest? What's in my new team's best interest?
What does Marcus Cooper do for a living?
He's making a lot of money right now to try and play football. Actually, that's not fair. He's not. He doesn't start getting paid until he makes the team. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, because this kid has had some really good NFL games. Had a really good season in Arizona before he came here. Had a decent year in Kansas City before he bounced around a little bit. And yet there's a reason that he's bounced. I think the Bears is third or fourth team. But he was struggling out there early last night. No question about that. Now, again, you're talking about A.J. Green on the one play. He's going to make a lot of people struggle. But as well as the young corners are playing right now in camp, not so much last night, I think that Cooper's probably a long shot to be on the final roster.
I actually liked some of the quick twitch that I saw from Leonard Floyd. You didn't see impactful playmaking, but I was just watching a guy who's coming back from a knee injury. It looks like I can have pretty fair expectations that he's at a minimum going to be a full-speed player right now.
Yeah, I think the best way to put this, Dan, this is why we have to be so careful with these exhibition games. As I said, there was some good stuff out there, you know, stuff you want to see. And the way I would describe it is I thought that Leonard Floyd in particular, but I would also add in Adam Shaheen. I would say that the tackles, Massey and Leno, and I worry a lot about Leno, I would put in this category, and probably Kevin White, even if not for the drop. He was running around. Those guys all look to be doing some of the things you want to see him do. I can't get over White dropping that one pass, but he did stay on the field longer than most guys who are going to be on the team, and he did constantly keep showing up in the middle frame, which meant he was part of the action. So there was some good stuff out there, but you're right. Yeah, Floyd was making a difference. He was generating pressure, and he wasn't getting much help out there. Now, again, the Bengals were arguably the worst offensive line in football last year. And so you come off an 8-sack performance against the Ravens to 1 last night, and you worry a little bit about what happened during the week. But so much of it is just practice and how they're approaching it. You got to be careful in, you know, trying to come to any final conclusions from that.
I wanted to ask you about Adam Shaheen, because you saw him with the 3 catches and 53 yards. You saw him get loose a little bit down a sideline. You saw a little bit of the speed. The Bears made moves at that position, though, that tight end spot. Well, not that they've got just the one, but there are a couple of guys vying for action there. How does Shaheen have to improve most? Like, in what one area does he have to improve most for this offense, in your opinion, Hub?
Probably his blocking, Connor, because he is a much better receiver than blocker, or at least was coming out of college, for obvious reasons. They said that they were happy with the way his blocking improved last year, but what's interesting, you're correct when you say they made moves, but what they've got now is 3 tight ends and Deion Sims, who's not a great receiver, Trey Burton, who's not a factor blocking, and Shaheen appearing to be the one guy who can do both. And so the goal would be for his blocking to be good enough that Shaheen can be on the field all the time. And then when they want to go 2 tight end and run the ball, it's going to be, for the most part, Sims out there. And an obvious passing situation is going to be Burton out there. But Shaheen is the one of the 3 that gives them the flexibility to do whatever they want if he, you know, fulfills his potential. And what I thought was kind of fun to see last night is, you know, there's no question about his size and that he's a pretty good athlete and a pretty good receiver. But going all the way back to the draft, you know, when you look at his measurables, they were unique triangle number side speed ratio for Division III football, you know, and they were pretty good for FBS football. But they didn't make him, they don't make him unique in the NFL. He doesn't have unique speed for an NFL tight end. He doesn't have the best athleticism we've ever seen. He's just a really nice complete package, and the analogy I've always looked at, or the comparison I've always gone for, the comp, a guy like Heath Miller, you know, Jason Witten is that style. Now, Jason Witten's going to be a Hall of Famer. I'm not saying he's got to be a Hall of Famer. But he's not going to be, you know, you didn't draft him to be one of these 80-catch, 1,100-yard tight ends. He's got a chance to be the complete package, to occasionally split a seam, but really be a big factor in the red zone and on third down.
One guy I want to ask you about who I thought we might have talked about more this year based on what was said about him last year and certainly looking at him is Roy Robertson-Harris, who has been grown into almost an ideal prototype of a 3-4 defensive end, the 5 technique, who at 6'6 and 300 pounds can stand there and stare a tackle in the eye and line up over him. Yet, you know, there is in the game at the very, very end. What's his progress been like, and what do you think the new coaching staff, and I know the defensive staff is the same, but it, does a new head coach perhaps feel the same way about where his arrows pointed as the old ones did?
He is somebody who I know that they're focused on. I think they're pleased with his progress. He definitely has made progress. We have to remember that as an undrafted rookie free agent out of UTEP, I believe it was, this is a stand-up outside pass-rushing linebacker who they've literally added about 30 to 35 pounds of bulk. And so he's not only learning to play a new position, but learning to do it with his new body. And he has shown some flashes of doing some really special things because he is an incredible athlete for his size. He was very active yesterday, but this gets back to in these games, you got to see who these guys are active against. And he started to dominate once the third and fourth stringers were on the field for the most part. He has been in the rotation with the starters. He's been out there with the big guys. He does appear to belong, and he's somebody that I think that the arrow is, they think his arrow is definitely pointing up. Now, one thing that we've seen in this relationship, though, between Matt Nagy and Vic Fangio is I think it's pretty clear this is going to be Vic's call. It's not like, you know, Nagy's going to come in and say, oh, you missed on this guy, I want him on the field. He is, I think, about as genuine as he can be when he tells us that he's letting Vic run the show on defense. So I don't think, and the entire, basically the entire defensive coaching staff is the same. So I don't think there's any real change there.
Hub, you and I were doing a couple of shows right before the NFL draft and after the Bears had signed Kyle Fuller to his deal. So we were, you know, you and I mostly focused on the draft at that point. I wonder what you'd heard and how you feel about Amu Kamara and about Kyle Fuller. Fuller had the pick and was scored on yesterday. Not so much necessarily in yesterday's game because the film is what it is, but how have you heard, you know, the conversation go? What have you seen from those two out of camp?
The two best players in camp, Connor. You know, some of the debate is which one's better. I think, and the real surprise is that I think the strong majority will tell you that Prince Amu Kamara has probably been the most consistent performer in Bourbonnais. And you know, you're talking about, I think it's a 9-year vet, either an 8 or a 9-year vet on his third team, who always had a rep, of being a really good cover guy, but not great ball skills and not very physical. Well, he has found his ball skills. He's intercepting passes every day in Bourbonnais, and he has gotten more physical. He's never going to be the most physical guy. Fuller should have gone to the Pro Bowl last year, but there's always a couple extra guys at each position who should go. So this is not a conspiracy theory thing. He just didn't happen for him. But now with so many people realizing how close he was last year, if he is as good or better this year, he is going to be a Pro Bowler the next couple of years. That's how well he's playing. So it's really interesting that right now, and you don't expect this in a Vic Fangio defense, but you'd have to argue the strength of the Bears defense is their cornerbacks, because you've also got Bryce Callahan and Craven LeBlanc both having really good camps fighting for that nickel spot. We just mentioned a guy like Marcus Cooper, who you would think is a veteran that they did bring back and didn't have to, that would be a lock for the roster. I don't think so, because once you get past Callahan and Craven LeBlanc, you've got these kids like Doran Grant, you know, who's having a good camp. There's some of these young corners that they like. So the secondary is loaded. When you talk about upgrading the talent on the roster, the secondary, there's plenty of talent there. Now, I'm still worried about that other safety spot next to Eddie Jackson, who I think is going to be a star. You know, that was my buddy Adrian Amos, who missed that tackle on Joe Mixon. You know, and it's going to happen. I mean, you're going to miss tackles, but just kind of the way he played it, the angle he took, the way he missed it, it was reminiscent of some of the struggles he's had earlier. So other than possibly, but the depth at safety is better than it's been. DeAndre Hall is back there playing well now. Deion Bush has flashed occasionally. You got Houston Carson. So the secondary looks really strong, and particularly the two corners you talked about are having an excellent preseason.
Hub, you mentioned Cravon LeBlanc, and the Bears discovered him when he was still on the Patriots during training camp when they got together and they had some practices against the Patriots. They're going to do that this week as they lead up to Thursday night's game with the Denver Broncos, and they always love this idea, these sort of these conferences where they get together and they get to see other people and other schemes, and you get to get out of your comfort zone a little bit and practice against them. What do you expect? What is the significance of this next game simply because they're also going to get in this extra work?
Dan, I think the practices are more important than the game, and to prove to you that I'm not blowing smoke, I'll be out in Denver with them for the practices, but I'm not staying for the game. So, and that's only because it's a long, expensive preseason trip, and you know what budgets are. But I'm looking forward to I guess the practices are actually Wednesday and Thursday. I think it's something that Trubisky needs badly, because now, you know, you can talk about first offense, first defense, and talking smack, and, you know, the camaraderie and the rivalry and everything that goes on. You never go 100% live in training camp. They won't in Denver, but you do go a little bit harder when it's against another team, and you do get a better effort when it's against another team. And so I think it's time. I think what we learned last night is that all the feel-good stuff is good and you want to continue, but they do have work to do, and they're going to get better work this week. So I don't think it's so much that they're going to find another gem they can pluck off the Broncos roster as it is they're going to get a better read on their own guys who, whether it's subconscious or intentional, are going to be working and practicing even a little bit harder than they have been. And in particular, I think the guy who needs it is Trubisky. I think Chase Daniel is fine. You know, he's come in a couple times, so you're solid at backup. But
Tyler Bray sucks.
That's where I was going. God forbid Tyler Bray has to play in a regular season game. I don't understand. I know he knows the offense, and I know he's a Matt Nagy guy, and I know he's got the NFL body. But he is awful, you know, and so I'm not sure. They have carried three in Kansas City. It looks like they're going to carry three here. But, you know, obviously it's secondary conversation. If we're worried week six, week seven, week eight about whether it's Tyler Bray or Chase Daniel, the season's over anyway. This is about Mitch Trubisky, and I think more than anything for him to get this work against the Denver first-string defense is going to be really good for the team this week.
Hub, thanks as always. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys. Take care.
That is Hub Arkish. I should clarify, too, the actual game against the Broncos is next Saturday.
That's right, Saturday.
I was looking at the Tribune calendar because they had the game listed under Thursday, but if you actually read it, it says that it's actually on Saturday.
Don't
even
actually
though it's...
read it. That doesn't help anybody. No. Just look and say things.
There is a huge story in the NFL that is going completely unmentioned. Hmm. It broke a couple days ago. I found it of interest, and the more I read about it, the more I had to keep rereading because I couldn't believe it. And it's a really good writer in the Los Angeles Times, a guy named Patrick Ruby that starts with an H. We've had him on the show before. He's written for The Ringer. He's a really good writer, really smart guy. And he did a little detective work and found something that has the NFL, frankly, completely terrified because it's a major uncertainty. They don't know what to do. They don't know how they're going to deal with it. And I thought you would find it interesting as we lead up to our awarding of the Ken Mastroli Award for the best player in a Bears exhibition game. We're going to do that at 10:40.
He's Dan Bernstein. That's a hell of a tease. So is he. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Bernstein and McKnight coming to you from sun-splashed Gallagher Way, just outside Wrigley Field. We will lead you up to Cubs baseball here on your home for the Cubs Sports Radio, 670 The Score. A lot of tables set up here for people enjoying some morning iced coffee, a little bit of cold brew as they're hanging out and taking in some red-hot sports talk. We have giveaways today, a lot of them. We've given away some things, but we have yet to give away our two...
More things.
Our $2,000 prizes. We've got those. We also have a chance for you to host your fantasy football draft party in a private suite at Soldier Field. And
I'm
going to
be there for that.
You're going to be there.
It's a panel of score experts, and I'll be there, too.
Is Shane there?
No, we don't know where Shane's going to be. I've yet to.
Have you downloaded the Find My Shane app?
I've downloaded the app. I have the app, of course.
It's more reason to go to it. Shane won't be
there. I just haven't tagged him.
That's right. That's a selling point.
We don't know that he won't be there. I haven't tagged him with the Shane tracker yet.
That's true. A pair of Smashing Pumpkins tickets at the United Center that we're also going to be giving away today. So I looked in the Los Angeles Times, and I read the story by Patrick Ruby when I saw the headline. And we had talked about it shortly after it aired, the HBO Real Sports story Unsettled, and where they tracked how many former NFL players had filed for their share of the $1 billion settlement because of disability, and just how difficult the league was making it using tiny, tiny, razor-thin technicalities and all sorts of nebulous diagnostic language to fight back against players who were clearly demented, incapacitated, etc. And the NFL was stung, I believe, by the backlash to that report, and shortly thereafter updated their website to indicate $500,000 have already been paid, or $500 million. Mm-hmm. Already paid out. That's what they said. That they have paid out $500 million, and there were more claims that already had been approved, and they wanted to push back and say, look, we understand all these legitimate claims. They of course claimed widespread fraud.
Right. That doesn't change the fact that you've had a lot of guys issue for or apply for some of that money and then be turned back because, well, you painted something with lead paint back when you were 14, so we can't describe necessarily your issues here to just football. We're not going to give you the money.
And so, well, you were able to hold a job 6 months ago because a friend of yours on a Tampa radio station put you on the air a couple times. That counts as a job, that means you were employed, and that means you don't get any money. So they did a whole bunch of that, yet they say they have paid all this money. What is interesting and what is frightening is in the detail for what they have paid money. Because when we think about this, and a lot of it is the branding issue, because even the NFL itself on their website, they call it the concussion settlement.
Concussion.
And I keep saying, it's not a concussion settlement. It's a brain damage settlement. And then you think, okay, it's CTE, it's chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and forget even if people are smart enough to know that it's not because of concussions, it's because of accrued subconcussive hits that are much more causal of this syndrome than concussions themselves. Okay, but it's even more than that. They had actuaries estimate what they would be spending on, what they would be paying off here, okay? And all I can tell you is, I know we have to get to an update here.
Yeah.
The actuaries, the projections, got it so spectacularly wrong, your jaw is going to drop. Joe, thanks.
Joe's going to be there, too. Part of that fantasy football expert list.
Ah. And the mention there, too, that on Monday, we're going to be out again. We're going to be at Bryn Mawr Country Club.
Oh, goodness, that's right. It's Joe Madden's golf outing.
Yep.
We're going to be there talking to everybody.
Yeah, there's people there. We're going to have them sit down, and we are going to talk to them. Things have livened up here at Gallagher Way. They've got the fountain on. Kids are playing in the fountain. They have singing guy.
I don't know that his jeans are ripped in enough places.
Who's singing guy?
Are they properly ripped? I mean, clearly they've been ripped many times. I don't know that they've been ripped enough times.
All right, so the NFL says, hey, look, we've paid out $500 million. Well, that's great. Here's what's amazing. $146.5 million has nothing to do with CTE.
$146 million
of the 500
that they claimed to have paid out.
Of that money, $146 million has been for Parkinson's disease and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease.
Wow.
That's the same thing.
I mean, that's...
Okay. This is 18 months since the settlement. 18 months, a year and a half, they've paid $150 million. And you say, okay, well, what was the estimate? They estimated what they would have to pay over 65 years.
For those two related things.
For those two non-CTE, this is movement disorders.
Parkinson's
and
ALS.
This is not a cognitive disorder. This is a movement disorder. It's still brain and spine,
right,
et cetera, and there's still obviously science involved here that tracks it to head injury. But this is not, technically, this is not a cognitive disorder. As you know, for somebody like Stephen Hawking, whose brain was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything else. What ALS is the insulation, the myelin around nerves dissipates, and it's like taking the rubber off of an electrical cord that the impulse can't get to where it's supposed to go. The impulse dissipates, and that's why the corporeal muscles don't get the nerve impulses. That's what happens. And Parkinson's disease, obviously, is the disease of tremors that you've seen. They only estimated 50 million over 65 years. That means those payouts are triple the 65-year estimate in 18 months.
That's mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling. And it also is something that hasn't really been talked about, because they do know, scientists believe that there is clearly a connection to slamming your head around and the risk of ALS and the risk of Parkinson's. Like Muhammad Ali had Parkinson's. Other boxers have gotten it, as well as what they used to call dementia pugilistica, which is now called CTE.
Right.
But it's only kind of beginning here, and the NFL hasn't really talked about it, and nobody's talked about it, and everybody talks about brain damage, and everybody talks about losing the ability to think. But now it's like, whoa, wait a second. Even their professionals, even the people in charge that they paid tons of money to figure out how much are we going to need, how much are we going to be able to pay out, you're already triple in 18 months what you had budgeted for 65 years.
We didn't see a lot of the new helmet rule get enacted last night. We did see some of it, I think, or probably more of it in that Bears-Ravens game. And across the league, you know, we'll see how some of those flags came in. But it kind of, I don't, whether it's Ruby's reporting, whether it's their own internal math, you know, the numbers. I mean, look, they had to pay for this stuff. They understand what they had to give out, what they had to pay out, and how just over budget they are, how drastically over budget they are. I'm not excusing their change in rule. I'm not excusing the way they went about doing it with this kind of nebulous, the removal of a phrase that makes it so nebulous and so strange and so not football. But you read numbers like this, you think about the checks that have to be written in this way, that should be written for guys who are suffering these diseases, who through football came up with these problems. It kind of puts into better perspective why that phrase in the helmet rule, in the contact rule, was taken out, and how referees, how the league itself has just kind of gone, yeah, well, we took it out, and we'll figure out how it works. We'll see how this preseason goes, but we have to take the head out of tackles in this game. Whether it works or not, the fear it's not about whether it works. They don't give a damn whether it works, because they can't fix it. They can't fix that part of football.
It's perception.
Without taking off pads and without putting flags on. They can't fix that part.
But the fear that
they have to operate with, the fear that they've clearly already operated with in taking that phrase out of the rule, it's obvious what that's a reaction to.
They're completely terrified by some of this stuff. And now, as we look, and completely underpublicized, like I saw a big flashing red light on this story. And there's, it's a long piece of reporting by Patrick Gruby talking to all the doctors and all the actuarial experts, everybody, to say, you know, what of what should the NFL be scared right now? And they have no clue. They don't know what of this is out there and how much more there's going to be and how much more connection they're going to find between not just cognitive brain issues, but movement problems that are occurring because people are slamming their heads around. We're going to do something extremely important. The Bernstein and McKnight Show has created something called the Mastroli Award. It is named in honor of former Bears training camp quarterback and arena football star Ken Mastroli, who's now a quarterback's coach. And because of his one spectacular performance in one exhibition game, there is an award in his name given after every Bears game on this show to the most deserving Bear. That Bear is going to join us next.
Yes.
Keep it here on The Score. Whether you describe it as flying or rumbling, that happened. And that means Ryan Nall of the Chicago Bears is indeed the Ken Mastroli Award winner for this week. And he joins us on Sports Radio 670 The Score on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Congratulations, Ryan. Nice work.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys.
So what has this camp been like for you? I know everybody said, hey, it's intriguing. Everybody's watching him, this big size speed combination. How are you? What's your comfort level right now in NFL offense?
I think we just lost Ryan Nall.
We
had him, and then we lost him.
Yep, we had him, and he was so excited to have won that his phone crapped out.
This is what happens when you hand out Ken Mastroli awards.
Oh, sure. Now he's full of himself.
You blow up a little bit. I'm sure that phone's ringing.
Dan Patrick's show is on the
other. Himself a hell of a game.
Yep. So he's you know how that happens.
We will reestablish connection with Ryan Nall here in a couple. You remember, Ryan Nall had more than just the rushes, too.
That's true.
Had a catch out of the backfield for 9 yards. It's a kid who can do both, and you need to in this offense, or at least that's the way they keep saying it. You've got to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield.
Unless you're Jordan Howard, in which case they just say that you
have
to.
Between the tackles.
All right, reestablishing contact now with Ryan Nall. Ryan, when the phone dropped, I was just asking how comfortable you are getting now in the NFL in this kind of complicated offense.
Yeah, I'm acclimating myself to the speed and the size and how fast the game goes. And, this camp has been pretty tough in terms of, we're going full pads, multiple days out of the week, and we're banging against each other, and then we're taking that, and we're going against other teams as well. And I think that I think I'm doing a pretty good job, getting myself used to the speed and the flow of the game compared to college.
Talking a bit, Ryan, about how much backs have to catch the ball out of the backfield some in this offense. Has that been a bit of an eye-opener for you? Was that something you were pretty comfortable doing at Oregon State? And how have you and the rest of the running backs kind of figured out their role within catching the ball?
Yeah, it's definitely one of, kind of an important role here because, in Coach Nagy's offense, you have to be able to run, catch, and block. And, for me personally, I feel comfortable catching the ball. I caught multiple passes out of the backfield at Oregon State and was able to produce in that aspect as well. So moving forward, with Coach Nagy's offense, I feel pretty comfortable catching the ball out of the backfield, going into open space and running a route or, just doing a check down and making somebody miss and getting a few yards to get the first down or whatever it may be. But I feel pretty comfortable being able to catch the ball.
You went to the combine. Did you have any NFL teams discuss any positional changes? I wonder, sometimes teams get creative when they see somebody with your measurables, size and speed and all that, and guys get creative or they try to have you do some new things. Did anybody approach you for that?
Yeah. There were a couple teams that asked if I was willing to play fullback or tight end or H-back. They just wanted to see kind of where I was at and if I was willing to, because obviously they knew that I played running back at Oregon State. And, I told them that obviously I'd be willing to make the change if that's what they needed and that's what they wanted me to do. But at the end of the day, I wanted to play running back in the NFL. It was my dream. It's been my goal since I was, in middle school. And, as the draft went on and free agency hit, Chicago was one of the few teams that saw me as a running back, and they saw my history, and they know that I can be able to carry the ball. And that's why I think that it was such a good fit here, and being able to showcase my talent at the running back position.
That said, have you gotten some work in other spots like that? I mean, whether you're a running back or not in this offense, being able to slide into a couple of different positions would probably be important, especially, making a roster.
Right, for sure. I would say, the only kind of really positional change is when we go into the empty set. We're brought out into space and we have to run some routes. But other than that, it's been pretty basic for me, just playing running back, getting the feel for the offense at the running back position before we can transition into any other positions. Maybe splitting me out at Y or doing some two back stuff. But for right now, it's just been sticking with the running back.
You mentioned the speed of the game, the size of the guys that are out there. What has been the biggest surprise to you? Everybody has some expectation of what that first NFL camp is going to be like. Is there anything unexpected?
I like to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. So, everything is kind of thrown at me. I've kind of expected it to come or was not surprised by it. So, I'm moving going into this camp and thinking of oh wow, this is new to me. This is what's going to happen? What is this? And all these new things come in as a rookie and things like that. I was just trying to prepare for it and make sure my mind is right. So, like you said, and like I was telling you how fast the game is. I knew it was going to be fast, and I tried to prepare myself to make it seem like it's like these guys are ridiculously fast. I'm not going to be able to even hit the hole, but. With that mindset, it comes a little bit easier when you get out there and you realize that, it's not as fast as I thought it was going to be. It's what I expected. So when I go out there, you got to play with confidence. You got to be able to play knowing that you can be successful.
I want to take you back to college for just a second. Since you're just fresh out, Ryan Nall, our Mastroli Award winner here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show for week two of the Bears preseason, you went to Oregon State. And my first job out of college, I went through Oregon State. Gorgeous campus. Corvallis was amazing. I love that place. But you always see this, big-time recruits go to schools, and they'll say that the tradition at this position is so big for me when I went to school. And you got Jaquiz Rogers and Evanson Bernard and Steven Jackson all going to Oregon State to be a Beaver. Did that really help in your recruiting? Do guys really mean it when they head there and go look for a positional history like that? Or is that something that just kind of gets said?
Yeah, definitely. I'm from Oregon. I'm from Portland. So I grew up watching those guys. And, they made some amazing plays and did some amazing things at Oregon State. So wanting to go there and be a part of that kind of, fraternity and be a part of that brotherhood is definitely something that helped me further my recruiting there. And I wasn't necessarily a big-time recruit, so I only had a couple of Division I offers, and I knew that Oregon State was going to be, kind of my home for me. And, with the history of running back there, it's just be a part of that legacy and be a part of something that – produces such good backs and have such good effectiveness at that position. It's something special.
Ryan, we really appreciate being a good sport and taking the time to join us today, and many more of those long runs, and best of luck on making this team.
All right, man. Thank you guys for having me on.
That is Ryan Nall, running back for the Chicago Bears, Mastroli Award winner for week two. And now it is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the Score. This hour's keyword is fall. Text fall to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is fall to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
You ever been up Corvallis Way?
I have not.
Gorgeous.
I have not.
Absolutely. Breathtaking.
I've been in Washington. I've been in Seattle. I have been in the Yakima Valley area. I've been in the Tri-Cities area, but not into Oregon.
You know how at Augusta you drive down the row, right? Right. There's trees on either side. There's a street kind of like that brings you into campus at Oregon State. I don't know what kind of trees they are. I don't get it. But in the fall, the leaves are changing, and it's all orange, like the orange on Oregon State's tree. It's just breathtaking. It's absolutely amazing.
Speaking of orange, I go to pick up my daughter from camp, and having been in the North Woods.
I did camp. I do North Woods, sure.
The water.
What she got.
Water at camp is full of iron.
It smells. It's got that. If you've ever had, you never forget that smell.
Camp smell.
It's
camp water smell. It's that sometimes you get some well water, something is more sulfuric. There's something about the North Woods and having a lot of iron in the water. But my daughter comes down to baggage claim, and I was like, why are you orange?
What? It's just, why was she orange?
Apparently, you spend 8 weeks showering in that water. It's like all her clothes were orange, and she was orange. Because they do the laundry at camp. And I said, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, you
get your mouth shut.
Yes, I thought more like Trump looking. I was looking like for the
is
little...
Is there iron in Diet Coke? Did we just figure something out?
I mean, it took care of itself. But she's like, this is from the water. I'm like, all right. And I can send you into the woods and you come back orange. But okay.
The orange children.
Yes, that's fine. I have Oompa Loompa children now. I'm picking up the other monster today. We'll see what he looks like. So I love the fact, too. Do you remember when we were at Smoke Daddy, we had one of these shows that was rained out, and we were sitting across the street at Smoke Daddy, and there was a guy who walked up to Connor McKnight and told him he sucked.
Oh, just immediately. This was like show number 9 or something like that.
Right away.
He was almost visceral. Like, he was having this reaction.
He's an old, like, fist-faced man.
Yeah, just sat at the,
scowling guy.
He sat at the corner of the bar the entire show, and it seems like he's been at the corner of many, many bars for many, many shows.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's that guy.
And he told Connor
he came by again.
We saw him again today. See, I thought it was a different guy. Like, wow,
no.
This is a small sample
same
size.
Guy.
People really are emboldened to say they don't like you.
Yes.
But it was the same guy.
It was. Same dude.
I guess he's just around here.
I don't know. Maybe he comes out looking for autographs or something. Maybe he's one of those guys. I really don't know. But I waved.
Yeah.
I just waved and said hello.
There might be a little adult autograph seeker in there.
Maybe.
Could be.
That's what I'm kind of pinning him for.
We are looking forward to having some surprises from just on the other side of this wall here, because we're right backed up against Wrigley Field. And from the Cubs clubhouse, we may have somebody joining us in just a bit as we start checking in with them as they begin a really important... Now, I say that, and I don't know if it is or not. It feels that way. It feels like it's an important 9-game stretch. They've got 3 against the Nationals, 2 against the Milwaukee Brewers, who trail them by a pair of games in the NL Central, and then 4 against the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are a much improved baseball team as well. The first of those games is going to be today, but we are going to take you to the Midday Midway next. What you got?
I got a ton. We're going to look into a linebacker in preseason who made some plays, a continuation of a stellar story. I'm also going to lament a little bit. A little piece of my childhood has been taken from a role that he was in and moved into a different one. And it hurts a little bit, Dan. It hurts.
Okay. Well, that I'm sad for you.
It hurts just a little.
We'll work through all this.
Thank you.
On the Midday Midway. It's next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us, and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.